We are so glad you've tuned into this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, especially if you've done so on a smartphone or tablet, as we zero in on a topic that is becoming more and more relevant to all of us. I'm Ryan Dobson.
And I'm Luann Crane, and our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And Dr. Dobson, what Ryan was just alluding to there is really this avalanche of technology that's just pouring in upon our families.
You know, I think most of our listeners would see that avalanche of technology as a positive thing.
Certainly.
Something very useful, something entertaining, something that helps you get your work done. But I tell you, there is a huge reason for concern on what that technology is doing to the human brain, actually rewiring the brain. And we're going to hear about that today. I have in front of me a news magazine. It's actually Newsweek. And you don't usually look to a news magazine for scientific information. But on July 16, 2012, there was a cover story on this very subject. And it's called Eye Crazy. Listen to this. Panic, depression, and psychosis, how connection addiction, remember those words, is rewiring our brains. And our guest today is an expert on this subject, and he brought this magazine for me. I'm looking forward to reading it. But it is his view that the information that was given here is scientifically valid and accurate, and we're going to talk about it today.
Well, it sounds a little ominous.
Well, it is, and I've had an opportunity to talk with our guest in my office before coming in here today, and I can't wait to get into this important information. He is a name that's going to be very familiar to those who have followed us on the radio for something over 30 years. I think it was the early 80s when Dr. Arch Hart and I began working together. You said today that you first became aware of my work in 1971.
That's right.
You heard me speak someplace.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's absolutely right. I was visiting from South Africa, contemplating my move to Fuller Seminary to be on the faculty on the psych school there. And I met you at a conference, and you were the speaker. You looked very young to me.
I was very young.
I don't know how on earth you could know anything really meaningful, but it was very impressive, and I introduced myself. Now, you don't remember me, but I remember you.
Well, and then I became aware of you very shortly after that when you came to our church. And you spoke on anger, and it isn't usual that I remember a quote from 30, 40 years ago, but you said something that stayed with me, and I've quoted it on the air many times. You said, forgiveness is giving up my right to hurt you for hurting me.
Amen.
I mean, what great insight that was.
I've heard you quote that many, many times over the years.
Well, it came from that that church service.
Let me just tell you, I owe it to an elderly African gentleman when I was growing up in South Africa, who used to tell me forgiveness. And this was in the context of the African situation, is surrendering my right to hurt you back.
Well, Dr. Arch Hart is the author of at least two dozen books. I think it's more than that. And we've talked about many of them on the air. And he's a former dean of the School of Psychology at Fuller Theological Seminary. He is a clinical psychologist, very knowledgeable of psychopharmacology. And in fact, you teach on that subject, don't you?
Yes, I still do that. Yeah, I'm pretty much retired otherwise, but that's a topic that I think is important and becoming more important.
Well, you have kind of specialized in stress management and its effect on the heart and the brain.
Yes.
And now you are more concerned, I think, than I have seen you in all those years that we've been getting together, having to do with what this explosion, and we called it an avalanche, of technology, the digital technology, is doing to the wiring of the brain. Does it really change our brains?
Jim, yes, it does. And let me say right at the outset that I'm not one of those technophobic type people. I built my first computer in 1976. I was programming it at the same time Bill Gates, and he built the same computer I built back then. Mm. And I have been programming computers and building gadgets and stuff. I'm a technical type guy. Mm. And so I embrace the whole technology movement. But it's come to the point now where our misuse of it is going to destroy us and our effective use of that technology. We are on the brink, and the neuroscientists are screaming out loud and clear that we are on the brink of a major, major shift in the human brain.
And that's what we would find if we went to the neurology journals. They are talking about this.
Yes.
This is not a small group of people who've stumbled onto something. No. This is a matter of great concern in the professional community.
Absolutely. And the book I have written on the topic called The Digital Invasion sets that out very carefully. This is a book that I see as a wake-up call to parents, to teachers, to educators, to pastors, all the way down. Because this is not just going to affect the secular world. It is going to have a very, very special impact on our spiritual world, our Christian life. Because it's rewiring the brain to such an extent that we are, listen to this carefully, we are slowly losing our capacity to contemplate and meditate.
Because we go at such a speed and we're used to.
The brain is being programmed for speed, not content. And the neuroscientists are telling us loud and clear that the consequences of that are multitudinous. It ranges all the way from severe psychological to severe biological health issues.
Now, you have seen the evidence of this in students and in their intellectual ability.
Yes. In teaching the psychopharmacology course that you mentioned, and let me just make it clear, not that I advocate overuse of medication. In fact, it's quite the reverse. I think it's important for psychologists to know when not to prescribe as when to prescribe. But in teaching that course, I have a fairly standardized examination, a take-home exam that I use at the end of the course, multiple choice, that they have to answer. And some of those questions you have to put together. This connect that with this, that concept, and pull it together, and then suggest what you do with a particular patient. I've been teaching that 25 years. Over the last 5 years, I have had to dumb down that examination. Hmm. They are losing their ability to abstract by pulling.
Think rationally,
pulling together different concepts like that. And there is evidence from the neuroscience field that we are probably losing 10, 15, 20% of the IQ, intelligence quotient.
That is shocking because children are deeply into this stuff. The text messages and the Facebook and Twitter, there's so many avenues.
Yes.
And this is for very young children.
That's correct. And our educators need a wake-up call.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They are embracing multitasking. I've spoke at a conference of teachers recently, and all the top leaders there were trying to get these other teachers and educators, to think more in terms of multitasking. How can you improve the multitasking of your children? It's the worst thing you can do. The whole multitasking idea is one big myth. If you want to join the Top Gun pilot training program in the Navy, they will test you, and if you are a multitasker, you will be rejected.
Hmm.
Because
elaborate on why that's a problem.
Because, you see, the brain is not designed to do more than one thing at a time. The scientists are all not screaming and telling us. What is the most effective is sequential tasking. Sure. You know, my wife came home from a conference yesterday, and she's got a dozen different things to do, right? This task, that task. But if in multitasking, what you do is you start this task, halfway through you switch to another task, and halfway through that you switch to another task, and then you go back to the first task, and the neurons, the memories of what you were doing in the first task are gone. So now you have to recapture that, as opposed to doing a task and finishing it.
And yet, let me jump in as the female at the table here, Dr. Hart. We always praise women for being multitaskers.
Yes, but you see, we're misusing the term. If you take a task and complete it, then move to the next task. The science is clear. You perform 30% more effectively than if you are jumping around. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason we jump around, the reason we do this multitasking is to avoid boredom. And this is why it's so appealing to children in school. Because writing an essay, you know, it's so boring. You've got to sit there for half an hour and write an essay. So after 10 minutes, if you can switch to another task for a while and then come back to this, you overcome the boredom. That's what the scientists are telling us. Mm-hmm. But you sacrifice part of the learning process. Mm-hmm. We have to wake up to the whole technology stuff.
Dr. Hart, you are saying that you've had to dumb down the test for these PhD students in your classes. What's missing? You know, a student that was taking your course 15 years ago that was getting the full test, and now the dumbed down and the further dumbed down one, are they worse PhDs than the ones from 15 years ago?
No, they're not worse. They are smart. They are just as smart. The difference is that 15 years ago, they weren't being distracted by all the other stuff, the texting and the other stuff that is now eating into their time. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. As a consequence of this, they're not getting as much sleep as they used to. And loss of sleep, it's very clear. If you don't get enough sleep, you don't learn. It's during the sleep that the learning you do is consolidated. There have been several studies have shown that if you learn a task and then test for it, you get a result. If you learn a task and then go and sleep and come back and perform that task, you perform 30% better. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing, Ryan. The second thing is that students want answers. Where in the textbook is the answer? Well, I'm trying to say to them, I want you to take this concept, that concept, that concept, combine it together and come to a conclusion. Mm-hmm. But the student is saying, where's it in the textbook? And so I have to modify my examination to just ask them simple questions that they can go to the textbook and answer.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, because if you just think of a smartphone, we don't have to think anymore. I just have to type two or three characters in and I have someone's phone number. I have the directions to somewhere. I have the definition of a word. I have absolutely anything I need.
You don't know how to spell.
That's exactly. Right.
Or write. The way to learn to write is the way you learn to ski. It's time on the mountain. Mm-hmm. You learn to write by writing. And if all you do are those little abbreviations for words, you're not learning to use the English language. I see many concerns with what's taking place here, but I haven't been as aware of the rewiring of the brain. I want to explore that more.
The other thing that is happening that's different from 15 years ago is that there's now a growing body of evidence The brain of internet addictions, which is what a lot of young people are, is starting to look like the brains of drug and alcoholics.
Oh, my.
Research, interestingly, in China has looked very carefully at this. And there's a close resemblance. There's a study, a Carnegie Mellon study, that 2 years of web use is now being linked to moodiness, loneliness, loss of real-world contact, depression. And lastly, video game addict research is showing some, and I'm quoting now, structural abnormalities in gray matter. That is, there's a shrinkage of 10 to 20%. And this affects speech, memory, motor control, and emotional management.
And is anybody talking about the relational problems that result from this
as well? Yes, and that's the other big myth, that the internet is providing a sort of social media. Well, it does, but the nature of the interaction, the relationship, is severely reduced. That you have more contacts on your texting and messaging, and less contact face to face. And when you don't meet with people face to face, relationships are severely impacted because the empathy circuits of the brain only respond to real person. Even seeing talking to someone on the screen, Skype or something like that, does not trigger those mechanisms in the brain.
Does it frustrate you or bother you or irritate you when you're having a conversation with someone and the phone rings or they get a text message and they're gone?
Oh boy.
They're no longer with you. We had a staff member who would do that. Invariably, his phone would go off during the meeting.
Yeah.
And we all had to kind of kind of look around waiting for him to get through with this.
But worse than that, Jim, is I can't stand and talk to a group of friends. Each one got their smartphone ready, you know, and three or four people talking to, at least 50% of them will be doing something on their smartphone while we're talking.
Dr. Hart, isn't that just, I have to be honest, that's just bad manners. I get that, you know, we want information, we want it quickly. I was talking to somebody in a very emotional time. A friend of ours had passed away and we were discussing it. And as we were talking, his phone beeped. And as he's talking to me, he picks up his phone and looks down at it and is texting somebody back as we're talking. Yeah. That's just bad manners.
Well, yes, it is bad manners. But the scientists are telling us it goes beyond that. That there's a certain addiction that when that thing rings, the circuitry of the pleasure system in the Thrill to Death you were quoting, it does something in that in that part of the brain where you are compelled to answer. It's bad manners.
Sure.
But it goes beyond that in terms of neurological function.
So to be clear, I'm thinking of the 30 and unders listening right now. This is not just an older generation who is a killjoy on the new fun toys we have and you don't appreciate them and you don't understand. There are some very real sociological and biological chemical effects that we're having on
That's
this new generation.
And I've got all the gadgets myself.
That's right.
But yes, there are a serious cumulative effects that are now only beginning to show. I try to look forward. I won't be around, but 20 years from now, what's going to be like then? Mm-hmm. You know, already people are wearing their phone on their ear, you know.
You see them in the airport. They're walking by. They're in another world.
50%.
I also saw some research just last week that says when you are talking on a cell phone or you're engaged in that kind of intense conversation digitally, that you're not aware of what's going on around you.
Mm-hmm.
And this program had a scientific base to it, and they had people talking on the phone, and then they had a clown on a unicycle, and he had a big red nose and everything to attract attention. And he was doing circles around these people that were talking on the cell phone, which explains a lot of the accidents that occur because you're not aware of the cars around you either.
Yes. Yes, it goes beyond bad manners. And there's a whole group of psychopathologies that are now emerging in the digital world.
In fact, I would like you to be with us on another program to extend this. But one of the questions I want to start with is the various systems in the brain that are interfered with by all of this the digital technology, the tranquility system, the memory system, the learning system, the attachment system, and the spiritual system. And I'm going to ask you to elaborate on that.
Yes. It is very helpful to think in terms of these systems in the brain. and to try to understand how they are being affected. Take the tranquility system. There's a part of the brain where, for example, when you if you take a tranquilizer, that the receptor is in that part of the brain, except that the brain makes its own tranquilizers, and that's what's supposed to be going there, not the artificial tranquilizer. But what happens with the extensive engagement of your digital gadgets is that your cortisol levels start to go up. And it from the biochemical perspective, it's primarily the impact that the digital world has on our cortisol.
Now, that's the stress hormone.
That's the stress hormone that initially mobilizes us to be more effective in what we're doing. It's cortisol that retrieves the fat that give us the energy. And then when we're in tranquility, it's the cortisol that takes the fat and deposits it around your midriff. So it's there for the next one.
That does damage the brain if you get a lot of it.
But what happens with the cortisol, initially it's helping you. But at a certain point it is designed. This is God's design I'm talking about here, to switch its function. And the cortisol's function now is not to help you feel good, but to save your life. It becomes preserving of you. Mm. And so what the cortisol does, it goes to the tranquility system, blocks the receptor so nothing can get to it, and up goes the anxiety.
All right.
That can become panic anxiety even.
We're out of time, but we've really got to come right to this point next time as it relates to parenting, because this has major implications for kids. And the moms and dads that are listening to us today really have to be with us, I hope, next time, because what do you do about this? Yeah. And that is the point of everything that we're talking about. Dr. Arch Hart, a clinical psychologist, a professor, a former dean of Fuller School of Psychology, and a godly man that's been my friend forever. And that, in fact, is the most important credential he has, is that I love this man and his wife, Kathleen. They are great people. She is the ultimate prayer warrior. If you got a problem, you want Kathleen praying about it.
Imagine me being married to her, too.
And you've spoken all over the country. And you're actually, if they wonder about your accent, you're from South Africa.
Originally from South Africa.
Yeah, you've come a long way to be with us today, and I appreciate it. And by the way, by the way, you've written a book on this subject that I've failed to mention until now. It's The Digital Invasion, How Technology is Shaping You and Your Relationships. You wrote it with your daughter, Sylvia Hart Freed, and next time you hear, I'm going to work you half to death. So you come back and be with us.
Thank you, Jim.
And you've been listening to Dr. Arch Hart, a clinical psychologist who is obviously very techno-savvy, and our own Dr. James Dobson on this edition of Family Talk. Ryan, I have to admit, I am still a little shocked to hear what technology is doing to our minds and our relationships, and we don't even realize it. Yeah. I would imagine that our listeners are very interested in learning more, as I am, about how this is shaping us and our families.
Well, Laura and I have talked at length about the effects of technology on our kids and
better
when to introduce it and how to introduce it to them and what level to introduce it to them. So I know our listeners are going to be interested in Dr. Hart's book, The Digital Invasion. It really is a great tool, and it's just out now, and you can find that at drjamesdobson.org. And when you're there, look for the link to Dr. Hart's website.
Which is the positive side of technology, Ryan, because while you're online, we would love to hear from you in that way. Go to our Family Talk Facebook page. Let us know what you thought about this conversation, or if maybe there was something new you learned that was a surprise to you today, or maybe it's even challenged you to start doing things differently when it comes to your technical gadgets, like finding out more about Family Talk on our mobile app. You can search for that at Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk on Facebook.
And here in the close, if you have a burden for families, if that's been placed on your heart, pray for us here at Family Talk as we strive to strengthen marriages and families through our work every single day.
And because we are completely listener-supported, would you also prayerfully consider a financial donation on behalf of this ministry? You can do so at that same website, drjamesdobson.org, or via Facebook, or even at that mobile app. Or when you call us, the phone number is 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825.
Thanks for joining us today, and make sure to tune in tomorrow for the conclusion of our conversation with Dr. Arch Hart. That's next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson. For those of you who enjoy our radio program, Family Talk, I have some good news. When you're not able to hear Family Talk right here on your favorite Christian radio station, you can catch us 24 hours a day by downloading the new and free Family Talk mobile app. Visit your app marketplace to download it today. And thanks for listening to Family Talk.